This is part two of the podcast for Wednesday, May 8th, 2019, Theories of Knowledge. So we're talking about Kant and the analytic and synthetic, the a priori and the a posteriori. All right, come to order, please. This might not be like the sexiest topic in philosophy. Next week, we're going to be talking about W.K. Clifford, and I think you'll like his essay, The Ethics of Belief, where he preaches at you about your duties not to believe wacky things. So that should be an interesting discussion. I think we'll talk a bit about postmodern philosophy, and we'll all get a good laugh from reading some Jacques Derrida and Heidegger. So that's going to be next week. So look in Moodle, by the way, for week seven. I've got some excerpts from Derrida and Heidegger. Maybe I'll put one more in there just for fun. And I think there are these guys. This guy Peter Boghossian up at Portland State. He's a philosopher. He and a couple of cohorts sent out these I don't know what you call them. Hoax papers that were just filled with gibberish. One of them, for example, it took the language of intersectional feminism and it interspersed it with the text of Mein Kampf. And it got accepted at several publications that published such things. And so the idea is that, you know, the standards are low and basically you just spin out wacky theories, and as long as you use the right buzzwords, people are going to publish you. So a lot of the postmodern philosophy is regarded by, like, I don't know, mainstream academics and philosophers as being incomprehensible nonsense and gibberish. And I've given you a couple of representative samples there to look at. By way of example, when I was in graduate school, my advisor had an excerpt from Jacques Derrida. Actually came to our university to speak. And so there was a little blurb in the student newspaper. He posted it on his bulletin board and wrote underneath, "I will give $100 to anyone who can tell me what this means." There were no takers. You'll get a flavor for that next week. So make sure to read that stuff in Moodle in addition to the chapter on belief and will for Monday. Okay, so more on Kant. So Kant, who might seem like he's writing incomprehensible gibberish, but if you really drill down, there's actually something worthwhile there. So he's talking about this category, the synthetic a priori, the most important category of knowledge. So if you get a question on the exam, what's the most important category of knowledge for Kant? What is it? It's the synthetic a priori. Okay, so every event has a cause. Do we know that through the senses? No, right? So that's why you look at Hume, right? Hume says, well, where's this necessary connection between cause and effect? Can you see necessity? Can you sense necessity? Can you touch necessity? Can you taste necessity? No. So the necessity is just a psychological habituation from seeing two things together in your experience all the time and seeing one happen and the other happen. And you're like, oh, A causes B. But Hume says there's no logical reason to think that the second thing has to happen if the first thing happens. So Kant says that's just too weird. And he says, look, we do have this rational intuition that there is such a thing as cause and effect. We presuppose it when we experience things, right? So, like, I don't know, you think about your car won't start, right? And you're like, well, why won't my car start? And you start looking for reasons. You start thinking, well, is it, you know, you turn it just goes click. Well, it's probably not, it could be the starter or the battery. Maybe it's the alternator. Might have something to do with the electrical system because it's not like turning over. If it was turning over, maybe there'd be some other issue, right? Maybe somebody pulled the spark plug wires, you know, or it's got loose. You start thinking about reasons why something's happening that didn't happen before. That you're presupposing that there's an explanation. And Kant says that's a rational attitude. And it's like, you know, kind of like the principle of non-contradiction. You might think that would sort of go here too, even though that's analytic. But Kant would say that the idea that every event has a cause is just as certain as that a contradiction can't be true. They're both a priori knowledge. One of them's analytic, a contradiction can't be true, that's part of logic, but the other one's synthetic. So it's a significant truth about the world that whenever something happens in the world, there's a cause behind it. And that cause will serve as a reason or explanation for why it happened. So Kant would say the synthetic a priori, again, this is the synthetic, most important category of knowledge. The presuppositions of science, such as every event has a cause, and maybe some other things, like the world is pretty much the same wherever we look at it, so like if this bit of copper conducts electricity, all copper conducts electricity. You might think about this sort of the idea of the laws of nature. Now Hume will say the laws of nature, this is kind of related to cause and effect, right? Remember Hume says you're no more certain that the sun will rise tomorrow than that it won't. You don't know the sun will rise tomorrow. Kant will say you do know the sun will rise tomorrow because of the laws of nature. Hume will say, well, how do we know patterns in the past will continue in the future? And I think Kant will say, you know, we know that patterns in the past, you know, will continue. And we know that through reason. It's not merely brainwashing of experience. It's not like the Pavlov's dog experiment. Because there's some underlying reality responsible for the laws of nature. Now, to come back to this question I asked before, Kant has these jargony terms, analytic and synthetic. Analytic, the predicate's contained in the subject. Synthetic, the predicate is not contained in the subject. A priori, something known through pure reason, apart from sense experience. A posteriori, something known through sense experience, after you have a sense experience. But he's got one other set of terms. What's this other set of terms? They're trying to give a hint. This will be on the exam. It's the one starts with an N, the other one starts with a P. All right, well, page through. Noumena and phenomena. Now, phenomena, I suppose, is a thing that you might have heard before. A phenomena is just like something that happens, that you experience. So, like, we talked about both Berkeley and Hume give a kind of phenomenological explanation of our experience. So Hume says the impressions are the things that force themselves on us, and they're lively and vivacious. And the ideas are faint copies of the impressions, right? And so he doesn't want to say, oh, well, impression is what happens when you're seeing the real tree, and then the idea is what happens when you're thinking about the tree that you saw later on, and you're not looking at the tree. He just says, well, what's the experience like, right? So he's trying to describe the phenomena. So you think about that. Kant uses the word in a similar way. So noumena is what Kant calls the thing in itself. So can we ever experience the noumena according to Kant? No. So you can never observe the world as it actually is. The phenomena is, again, this is kind of jargony, the thing as such, or as humanly experienced, is a easier to understand translation, paraphrase, as humanly experienced. The thing as such is kind of like a weird Germanic construction that doesn't make much sense in English. But the thing as such, he means, well, the thing as we experience it, as humanly experienced. So Kant will say that the noumena is causing the phenomena. We can never know the noumena itself, but we can know, based on the phenomena, that the noumen is out there and that the noumen is causing our experience, and that there must be certain things true about the world as it is in itself that we can get to by noting how our experience is. So Kant is saying that if there weren't a world that's a certain way, we wouldn't have the sorts of experiences we do have. So given that we have these kinds of experiences, what must the world be like? Oh, well, there has to be an objective world. There has to be something like cause and effect. There has to be laws of nature. And then I have to be a thinking subject with independent existence from the material world. So I'm a thinking subject. And I have existence, objective existence. So you look at all these things that you know, Hume's skeptical about. He's skeptical about cause and effect. He's skeptical about the material world. He's skeptical about identity, about whether persons exist. Kant says, no, you are a person. You're a thinking subject. And he sort of goes along it will go along with Descartes, the rationalist. He'll say, well, you know, I have awareness of my own thoughts, and I have, like, an experience of myself as a thinking subject, and that's kind of an a priori intuition of my own existence. And furthermore, like, you know, a bundle of perceptions can't learn things. It can't learn through experience, certainly, right? So it's just like if it's a random collection of ideas, isn't capable of learning and comprehension. So Kant would say there is a thinking subject, there are such things as persons, there is a material world, and there is cause and effect. But we can't prove those things to the senses. But we know they exist, so they must be a priori. We know them through reason. So that's essentially Kant's approach. So he'll say there are certain things that we know through reason alone that the senses can't tell us. Once we start out with those, then we can use our senses to try to figure out stuff about the world. But we should know that all we're really doing is kind of, we're making generalizations about our experience. We can never get in the world as it is in itself. We can only get to the world as it's humanly experienced and actually conceived as well. So we'd say even the categories of thought we use, like thinking about the distinction between subject and object, is... It's a feature of human cognition, the way we process information, and it's not part of the external world. So he would say that it's all like Locke's secondary qualities. Secondary qualities. All right. So let me send around the roll sheet, and I'll ask a brief quiz here. Oops, that's one that's filled up. Yeah. All right. Oh, it's in my book. Yeah. Maybe I'll just ask these. I've got a couple of set of practice questions up on Moodle. Maybe I'll just take questions or comments right now. Any questions about Kant, about any of these terms, noumena, phenomena? It's like Locke's secondary qualities. So there'll be a question in the exam. You know, just what does Kant say? And what Kant says basically is it's all like color perception, right? So the world isn't really red. We have red experiences. That's caused by something like light wavelength. We interpret it as red because of the kinds of color receptors we have. In the same way, Kant would say we have certain kinds of perceptions. We also have certain kinds of conceptions, the way we think about things in terms of like subject and qualities. We think about material objects, and we think about them having qualities. Like in the noumena, there's no distinction between substance and qualities. There's just reality. But we break things down into, okay, here's an object and here are its qualities which qualify how it exists. So there are lots of these sort of categories of experience that we impose on the world. So in the same way that there's not really red out there in the world in itself, that is kind of a hybrid between what's out there and how we interpret it, Kant says everything's like that, even shape and size, even the concept of like how many things there are in this room. It's sort of an arbitrary question, right? So are we to count like the objects? Does a chair count as one thing, or do we just count its parts? Does the table and the legs, is it separate? Are we to count, the molecules in the room, right? So it's sort of an arbitrary question. So how we break up the world and how we divide and categorize things, it's a human thing. And so what science can do is make generalizations about our experience, but it can never talk about the world in itself. So what Kant would say is we need to lower the bar of knowledge. So what does this mean? Well, you're trying to do an exercise, and you can't quite lift the amount that you want to lift. So you lower the bar. It means you just lower the standards a little bit. So he would say the philosophers are wrong. We can never know reality in itself. We can only know reality as humanly experienced. Let's call that knowledge. Let's call the generalizations that we make about our experience knowledge, and that, because that's the best we can do. All right, exam opens tomorrow at 9. Visit the tutors, come by office hours, send me a little message if you have any questions. See you on Monday.